Welcome to the Overweight Mind podcast. My name is Jay Nixon, and I'm the best-selling author of The Overweight Mind. This podcast is where the power of positive psychology, mindset, and personal development converge to transform lives. I hope you'll join us on this uplifting journey as we explore the secrets to creating a lifestyle that leads to happiness, health, and wealth. Discover how science of the mind can help you achieve your weight loss goals and unlock your full potential of life. It's where the magic of the mind meets the path to a healthier, wealthier you. Welcome to the show. Coach Carrillo, welcome to the show, brother. So excited to talk to you today, and thank you for making the time in your schedule.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know I've been a fan of yours for a little while now because I tag you on a lot of Instagram posts. And I'm going to tell you how you got me as a guy. So I'm a Texas-born, football-bred, grew up with a mouthpiece in kind of guy. And I heard your video where you talk about lazy people do little work and think they should be winning, but winners work as hard as possible and still worry about being lazy. And I was like, this is my guy. Like I'm 50 years old this year. I got 1 year eligibility left. And if you're looking for a 50-year-old guy, I'll come out, coach. I'll move to Charlotte. I'll do what I need to do. I'll walk on, but you're the kind of guy that I would play for. And it just got me so fired up. So I have to get this guy on the show and I just want to learn more about you.
No. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That video went pretty viral. It's still going every day. I think I get tagged in it. It was our first workout at Georgia Tech when I got there. And I just felt like that was a very important message that I believe in. And it's true. I mean, it's the truth. Like, there's the reason people gravitate towards that message, in my opinion, they're tired of people expecting and expecting and expecting without doing anything to earn it. And they think it's supposed to happen that way. And for some people it might, but those people aren't built to win. And I really believe that the real winners, like, I'm not talking about a scoreboard. I'm talking about, like, you know, the ability to impact other people, the ability to be a good dude for your family. Like, that's like being a winner. And those people, they're never not paranoid about their own potential. They're always going to find a way.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it resonated, like, you know, obviously in the football sense, I think it's powerful. But I think if you look at it from a life perspective, it's really how the most successful people in life are looking at life day to day. Am I being a good husband? Am I being a good father? Am I being a good employee or boss or whatever it is? It's like there's a lack of, you know, like you said, there's an anticipation that you should be given things, especially in the modern world that we live in. And so there's a refreshing nature to that message of, hey, listen, like, winners work. Like, you got to work to be a winner. I keep thinking about, like, how did you get here? Like, have you always been like this? Like, were you this kind of player? Were you this as a youngster? Or I read a lot of articles about you, and you consistently talk about mentors and, you know, people that you looked up to and people you learned from. How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, I was not like this as a kid. I mean, I was always playing sports my whole life. I loved it. I always was staying busy in that stuff, but I wasn't the greatest kid. I wasn't like a go-getter, do all this extra work when I was younger. But when I got to college, I kind of got away from home and a lot of other things that were distracting. And I got focused and I figured out what I wanted to do with my life. And then it got narrow. Then it got really, you know, okay, if I want this to work, this is what I have to do. And then if they're not doing it, I'm doing double. You know, like, that was kind of the shift I had in college. And then, yeah, mentors. I mean, they were the blueprint for me to carry this thing on, in my opinion. Like, I had three of the best mentors I could have ever asked for, and they still guide me. They're still my North Star every time I get lost. And I'm just really thankful for a lot of people, especially my wife and my parents, that just kept me going through this. I mean, it's been a rough journey. I'm not going to lie. hasn't been all rosy, but no, I got a lot of pain in my heart to share with others that can help people. And that's been the goal ever since.
Well, doing what you do, being a college football coach, a strength and conditioning coach, I watched one of your videos and you talked about how you know, everybody would love that multi-year contract, right? Like that multi-year deal, but nobody wants to work on the, you know, the daily contract of like, what am I going to do today to get better? And when I heard you talk about that, I thought about your job specifically, and it's, you know, it's purely tied to success, right? If you're in it with a program that goes, oh, and whatever, every single year, you're going to constantly be having to look for a new job. And so you really are on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, season-to-season contract. And you can tell, like, you've got that kind of enthusiasm. I read something about you, and you said after every workout you guys do in the strength and conditioning setting, you try to give the guys some kind of message. You try to leave them with something. Is that something you've done since the beginning, or is that something you picked up along the way? Because you know that last thing you say is maybe the thing they're going to remember for the rest of that day.
Yeah, so every time, like, I was an assistant at Michigan for 3 years, and I was trying to, you know, really plan on being a head guy one day. And I would take notes, and a big hobby of mine ended up being coming up with my own quotes and just like drop down menus on common words like leadership, toughness, accountability, effort. And I would just think of different quotes that have maybe never been said before that people might relate to. And that kind of got the ball rolling, because then I got a head job in 2015 at North Texas. And then I wrote the lift, I had everything planned. And then on the last template on the bottom was a message of the day. So it's just part of who I've always been since I've been a head strength coach. And then, you know, when cameras got involved, then other people found out.
Yeah. I got to believe that res. I mean, listen, I'm an old school, I'm an old guy, but I got to believe that those messages matter. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, cause there's so much distraction, especially in the world today. Like when we were growing up, there wasn't that much, like there wasn't social media. You know, my coach was my, like, you know, almost like a family member. My coach could tell me to do anything and I'm going to do it. I don't know that that's the same way today. So I think you've got to find unique ways to get, especially young men, to pay attention, because there is so much distraction. So I got to believe that those messages really hit home for those guys and keep them bought in as part of a team.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. Like these messages, they're like, which is now a book. It's, they're all different because every day is different. Like, I don't have, you know, the cookie cutter rehearsed message for these guys. Like, if I feel something that day, I'm changing the message. And like it, I might have like wrote down some key words to have that message, but I also don't feel worthy to speak to these kids if I'm not doing what they're doing. Like if I'm not doing their workouts before they get here, and then maybe fighting through that toughest part, or like, I'm not going to coach it with much passion. I'm not going to really know when they're about to hit the wall. So I can't be the best that they need. And at the end, I just feel like one of them, like a teammate almost, getting to speak to them about life, about a mistake I made, about a regret I have, about today's workout, with the purpose of it. Or it's just all, it's all heartfelt.
I think that's one of the things I admire about you. I can tell that when you're talking, it's not scripted. It's not some kind of like BS that you've conjured up that, like, you know, you're trying to be, you know, Instagram famous. Like, this is a message that you're really hit home for you. And I also love the fact that you can tell that you're living the same life you're talking about. And so there's congruency there. And I think the men probably see that. And they're like, listen, coach isn't full of it. Like, he's doing the things that he's asking us to do. So I can't believe, I'm assuming you get big buy-in. I'm assuming that players love to be around you, love to play for you, do what you ask them to do. Has that always been the case, or have you had to evolve as, you know, I think what you were a graduate assistant in 2009, right? So that's obviously, there's been a transition from 09 to 2024. Like, how have you evolved through all of that?
So, yeah, I mean, I felt like once I saw my mentors run the room and how it was managed and how they got buy-in, I felt like that got me bought in, and that made me want to keep going until I possibly got a chance one day. And when I did get a first head job, I had all these dreams and visions of like doing it the right way, and everything that I planned was going to go to work. And yeah, I did everything I wanted to, and it was going great, but there were a few guys that, you know, didn't buy in, and they weren't all about it, and they didn't like the excitement, and they didn't think they had to work as hard as others because they were still going to play. And that messed me up at first. You know, I wasn't like prepared for that. I didn't know how to handle that at first. So I'm like, how can you not appreciate what we're doing right now? Like, that didn't make sense to me. So I didn't handle that right. And I took it personal. And looking back now, I've been in that same situation multiple times and handled it much better and ended up getting that kid to buy in even more than everyone else. So I've learned a lot. I've made mistakes. I've learned a lot. I've made mistakes. And now I feel like I have a pretty good idea of what's going to make them excited and what's going to keep me fired up to keep them excited too.
I think this is a great lesson, because I think whether you're a coach or a teacher or a parent or a business owner, that you're everybody's leading somebody, right? Even there's players that are leading other players. There's employees that are leading other employees. So when you see that and you've got a couple of guys that you're like, hey, I don't think these two guys are really bought in like everybody else. Do you now kind of have like a systematic approach? Like, can you give the listeners like an idea? Because I think you can implement this into a parenting model, a teaching model, a business model. Like, what do you do now that you didn't used to do? Because I'm like you, I'd take it personally. I'd be like, are you guys insane? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. So first year when I was the head guy, like, I remember I set the lift schedule for the summer in the locker room for the guys to look at, like, what groups they were going to be in. And when I was taping it up on the wall, one of the players that, you know, I had problems with in the past, he was like, 2 o'clock in the summer, I'm not going to be at that lift, coach. I go, yeah, you are. And he's like, no, I'm going to be at the pool. I'm like, do you understand? Like, if I was your age, I would beat the living hell out of you right now. Like, do you understand that, right? Just so we're on the same page. And now, like, back then, I obviously didn't do that, but it got close. Now, if a kid were to say that to me, I'd be like, no problem. Go take it up with your position coach. And that's the only times we could get to work. So it's not personal, buddy. You know, I would have walked away.
So you've kind of grown, and in your growth, that's changed the delivery of how you're handling the situation.
Right. And then also, like, ways that you kind of diffuse all that stuff is the one-on-one meetings before any of it happens. Like, the interview is so crucial to these kids, about just talking to them about how they're even here, the lifestyle that they have, the biggest obstacles they've overcome, the most important people in their life, you know. Just all this kind of stuff you can find out before you get going has helped me a lot, but it's not always perfect.
I'm assuming all of these experiences are where the book came from, is why you decided, hey, I'm going to start putting these things on, you know, on paper, so that people who I don't even get the opportunity to see face to face can actually get, you know, these messages. And that's kind of the book's called Firelighters 365. So was it always going to be a book, or did you just wake up one day and you're like, hey, like, this would be something really cool for people that I don't get to touch, you know, one-to-one?
Yeah. So I started writing in like 2015, and I was going to call it the No Talent Code. And I had different chapters of beliefs I had of things that take no talent to be great at. And that was my whole, like, I was going with that one. And then as I got closer to like my Georgia Tech years, I started realizing, like, all these messages I'm giving every day, they can help so many different people daily, you know, and I don't have to make it a chapter book. I can just have a one a day powerful message for people. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to do it that way. And then I started taking concepts out of that book that I already was halfway written and just segmenting them into days. And then I got really organized, and just, I had doubts. I had, you know, things that I didn't push it out early enough. I didn't know if I wanted to. It might be a distraction. And I'm like, you know what? This needs to be out there. If I was a coach, I would want to have this book.
Yeah. I've written two books, and I can relate to all those feelings. It's like, you know, some parts you're like, who am I to be writing this book? Right. And what, you know, and then you eventually get to the place where you're like, listen, you probably a lot like me. I was like, if this just helps one person, like, in any walk of life, like, it's worth me putting the information out there to the world. So I love that you did that, because I think it's the collection of information that you've got access to, that you've over the years, is so vast. I mean, I look at you as almost like an old school coach in a modern era. Like, I don't know, would you describe yourself as that, or how would you position yourself?
I think that's an accurate statement. Like, I don't believe in all the gadgets. I don't believe in that you need all this cute stuff. I believe you need your teammates. And I believe there's a lot of ways to make you guys feel the same adverse situations that you're going to have to go through in the game together through training. Like I don't want to do this job if a janitor can come in, hand you the same card, and you get just as strong because you just followed the script. Like, that's right. Not why I'm here. I'm here to create a culture and buy-in for people that come from every background that really end up loving each other in the end and want to take the field with each other.
How is that? How's the process for that? Because you hear about, you know, the locker room on a football team is one of the most important things, you know, that there is. It's like, you know, we'll equate that to the break room at the office or maybe the kitchen table at the home. But if there's not a unison or, you know, everybody bought in on the same page, that's where the challenges come in. Has it gotten tougher to get buy-in and create team unity? Or is that really coach dependent on how you and the other staff members are setting everything up?
I don't think it's hurt buy-in at all. If anything, it's become more scary for players now because they can get cut at any point. Like, they can be told to hit the portal tomorrow. Okay. You know, if they're not, that's the threat now. So kids know, like, also, like, yes, they can leave, but they got to be careful with that because they don't know what they're going to get with that. So everything's kind of almost balanced out with, yeah, the focus has shifted, but the buy-in in the weight room for me has never changed. It's always been exciting, competitive, hard, tough, fun. And now I do believe, though, like, the money thing and the deals that these kids are getting, and that hasn't shown itself to me very much yet. But at the same time, I do believe it takes away from the pride of losing and winning. Like, it's, yeah, it doesn't mean as much, like, if they're getting paid, because it's like, all right, I'm getting mine. It's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, this is the end of the world to me, and I'm going to, like, die tomorrow because we just lost to that team.
Absolutely. 100%. I think as a fan now, when you watch the game, I don't know if it's, like, implied, or you kind of see that in certain teams in certain areas. And you've had the opportunity to be in a lot of really great programs from, you know, Mississippi State, Georgia Tech, Michigan, Virginia, North Texas, all of those. Has it been the same, or is every place you've gone, like, is the culture need to be recreated? Like, when you bring I'm assuming that, like, you bring a higher level of intensity than maybe other strength and conditioning coaches or position coaches or whatever. Is that always accepted right off the bat, or do you have to get the buy-in from a personal level as well?
It's different everywhere. It has its challenges everywhere more than others. Cause, like, I've had now 5 head jobs and for 5 different head coaches, and some years it's year 1, some years it's year 5, and I'm the new guy, you know? So you gotta be smart with how you deliver what you want to get across. And I just believe no matter what the approach is, it has to be about them. It has to be about the players, why would they care that you're there? What can they be excited about? What are you giving them to look forward to? And then move forward. Because I always say to the guys, like, you please, like, don't trust me. You guys should not trust me. I mean, I'm strength coach number 2 or 3 for some of you. And just give me an opportunity to earn your trust and give me a chance to interview all of you and give me a chance to show you I'm not going to change any day. And I'm going to be the same person for you, rain, sleet, or shine. And just give me a chance to really get you to buy in.
I don't know that everybody understands what it is that you get the opportunity to do with the kids. Like, I may be wrong here, but I believe your title is the only coach per se that has access to these kids 24/7, right? Like, it more than, like, the head coach or position coaches because of the strength and conditioning programs. So you're with these guys even more than their position coaches are for the lineage of a whole year. Is that
correct?
Yeah.
And I have a relationship with every kid on the team. Like,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
You got coach now, coordinators got half this team. Right. Special teams guys got like 70% of the team, but you're dealing with the whole team every day. And it's a challenge. I mean, especially when the depth chart gets put out, You know, you got 60 kids that aren't happy,
right?
Or 70, and then where do they come? They come to you because they trust your opinion and they know they have an ear to listen to. And like, I love that part. I think that's a great part to have if you're a strength coach, because I think I've used my psychology fake degree the last year more than ever. Yeah. You know, of kids that, and on the transferring and a whole bunch of things are going through their mind. Pressure from home, girlfriends. I mean, there's so much in their life beyond football that they need guidance with.
I talk about human psychology all the time. It's really what this show is kind of predicated on, is the importance of your mindset, your, you know, it moves everything forward. And I would assume that those kids, the 60 that aren't where they want to be, you know, sometimes like you're the most important person in their life at that stage, because it's really going to be pivotal and transitional of, you know, do I want to move up to that first level, or am I just going to sulk, be upset and stay where I am? Because then they've really got an opportunity. If you look at adversity as opportunity or challenge as an opportunity, which I do, I think some of those kids might come to you and say, okay, coach, like I didn't get what I wanted. What are we going to do about it? Like, you know, I'm here to get you to help me get to that next level. I'm assuming there's got to be a sense for you that gets you fired up about those guys.
Well, absolutely. And that's why I'm really glad I played, you know, like that's a big reason why, you know, playing the game that you're coaching, that's where it comes in. If you choose to use it, because like there was times in college where I was like, God, man, this is crazy. Like, I can't believe this, you know, like this isn't fair. These were all my thoughts. And I ended up saying to every kid, I'm like, have you made it awkward yet for our coaches to not play you?
Yeah.
Like, have you made it to the point where like they can't ignore you on film every night when you guys are watching it? Like, they have to lie to themselves, because it's not because of your effort. It's not because of the plays you're making. So what is it? That gives you peace at night knowing you can't do anything more. So if it is a personal vendetta, if it's a personal vendetta, that's what it is. But at least you'll know you can't possibly do more.
Right. I love that. How is that received? I mean, I'm assuming from a kid that isn't doing what he knows he should be, but is ready to do that, that might be the kick in the butt that they need to get to that next level. How many times, I mean, it's probably been hundreds, but do you see that happen a lot? Like when you have that talk with them and then they start to transition into a different human?
Some kids break through and make it. Some kids don't, you know. Yeah. some kids fade, but in that moment they completely understand and they're determined. So that, I think that's the point. Then you just try to remind them of that in a different way the next week.
You talk a lot about adversity being a gift, and that's one of my philosophies as well. I believe that wholeheartedly. How did you, was it through experience that you came up with that? Because a lot of people look at adversity as like, it's the worst thing on the planet. Like, my life is over, or, you know, all of this stuff that you hear. And then they also feel like because of the adversity, like they're being set back in life and it's unfair and all those things. How have you moved to the other side of that, you know, to the coin of like adversity is an opportunity?
Yeah. And I still work through that. I'm not perfect at it either. A lot of different adversities for everyone, you know, like if it's not this, it's that. If it's not this, it's that. So, you know, getting fired is hard. You know, it's not fair. They have no reason to let you go. Your results were great. The kids were healthy. They were tough. They liked each other. The buy-in was amazing, but you didn't win games, so you're attached to that coach. See ya. All right. And that's like painful to tell your kids that, and family, and they have friends, and it's brutal.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it? You pray to God, and you know you did it right. You know you couldn't have done more. I wouldn't have changed the thing. And hopefully you get to put all this anger into positivity to the next job. And that's what I've tried to do everywhere I've been.
I think there's something special about, you know, coaching your position, because you mentioned the attachment. You know, a lot of times when the head guy goes, the whole staff is gone. Very rarely do they keep everybody else in just a new head coach rolls in, if ever. So you've got to know that even if you're, and this is a tough place to be, and I want you to talk about this, how you mentally prepare for this, because like you said, you can do everything right. You can get the kids where they need to be. You can have a total buy-in, healthiest program it's ever been. But if the head guy goes, your chain is attached to them, that's got to be tough. But that's got to be hard to, and the resiliency that you talk about, your resiliency has had to have fortified itself over the years. How did you get to the place of knowing that, like, I could do everything I'm supposed to do, and it's not personal, but I'm going to have to go look for a new job, tell my wife and kids, hey, we're moving to wherever it might be.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, there's no easy way around it. It's the worst. It's the worst part of the job. It doesn't make sense. It will never be justified. But at the same time, another guy's going through that too, and I just took his spot. You know, like, that's how
perspective.
That's what we signed up for, as hard as it is to say. You know, it's in the small detailed fine print on the bottom that nobody reads. And that's the biggest thing you have to deal with. Other than that, I mean, I think it's building a resilient kid that I have. You know, I have three kids. They make friends quick. They learn how to get adjusted to a school quick. They get on new teams quick. And in life, I think that's going to end up benefiting them completely, and it's going to give them an edge. So I have to look at it like that, because if I don't, it gets bad. Yeah.
You just be pissed off all the time.
Yep.
And I'm assuming your wife has to be an unbelievable human to know that, you know, every year you could walk through the door and be like, hey, how you doing? And she's like,
Yep.
So that's gotta be a hard conversation to have with her. So she's gotta be a unbelievable human to be able to say, okay, like, we're gonna do this together.
Yeah, and she's been with me since the first South Florida internship. So
okay, so she's no rookie. She's no rookie to the situation.
No rookie, knows how it works, and she's been the only reason this whole thing works.
I agree. I tell people that all the time. Like, it's like the team. You're only as strong as the weakest link. Like, if you're not associated or attached to the right partner in life, like, life can be really difficult. But if you get associated or attached to that right person, I mean, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I've got one of those at home too, where, you know, whatever the adversity, we're going to get through that together. So you're a lucky man in that aspect. But I would assume that, you know, meeting you and knowing you, like, that's part of the package. Like, you're, you know, this is the guy that you are, and you're always going to go to the next level and try to make it the best you can for your family, yourself, and, you know, for the young men that you get to meet. What's it like going to a new school? I mean, after you get over the being pissed off and the, hey, this doesn't make any sense, and the moving trucks and all of that jazz, and, you know, the first day in that new facility, is it just a whole, because I'm thinking about your psychology, like, gotta be tough to walk into a new facility. Sometimes you don't know the other coaches, you don't know anybody. You're just the strength and conditioning guy. How do you set the stage for that?
It's exciting. I mean, I really do get excited about it, and I'm thankful, truly thankful for it. And I know how hard these jobs are to get, like, especially, like, I mean, you know, to not have a gap in a year so far of not being able to find something has been a blessing, because there's a lot of coaches that are amazing that the gaps come and they can't get anything after they get let go. So first of all, just like, the real story is, like, I got my first head job in North Texas. Then I got fired that year. It was year five of their staff. And if they didn't win, I already knew that going in. Then I got a head job at Louisiana Lafayette. Again, year five in that program. I got to last 2 years there because we went to a bowl game and then we got fired. That was what really hurt. Like, that, to me, it was like, what are we doing? You know, like, this is kind of crazy. I felt like I really did a good job. And that's where it really came from. And then the Buffalo opportunity came to be a head guy again. And no one was excited to move there. Like, everyone was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, but when I met the team and when I met the coaching staff and when I met, you know, all the people in that building, it was like, all right, this is going to work. I just know it. And it did. And it just hit the jackpot there. And we won 10 games and broke every record and National Strength Coach of the Year. And then you go to Georgia Tech, but still, you're moving.
Right.
You're still, like, you're moving happily this time.
Yeah.
But it's still rough. Like, if you win too much, it's rough. If you lose too much, it's rough. It's like, you can't stay anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I got to think that's part of your day-to-day contract thing. I think you have to probably position that in your own brain of, like, all I can do is what I can do today.
Right.
And if I just keep moving forward that way. And I think that's such a great message too, because I'm assuming that you're delivering that to the players. It's like, hey, like, you know, we're only as good as what we're going to do today. Like, what we did yesterday or last season is really going to be irrelevant. So we got to keep continuing to move forward. Let's talk about your motivation really quick. Like, you know, I'm a big, you know, I think motivation is important, but I think discipline is the linchpin of success, because when motivation fades, really discipline's all you've got, right? So it's like the whole Jocko quote, discipline equals freedom. How do you teach both of those? Because I think, and how do you teach yourself both of those? Like, you strike me as an uber disciplined guy. From, you're a super fit guy, your messaging straight, it's crisp, it's clean. But there's got to be days you wake up and you're like, coach don't feel like being coached today, right? And those are the days that matter. What do you do on those days?
I think, like, all the people that say discipline over motivate, like, I get it. I know what they're saying, but, like, I do believe you got to be motivated to stay disciplined. Oh. Like, I think
I think it's a scale like this. They move all the time.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, if you're not going for anything, or like, if there's no goal in mind, you're going to lose motivation, and then you're probably going to lose discipline. Like, I feel like they go hand in hand. Like, when you don't feel like it, you don't want to stay disciplined either. And I guess, like, you can still stay on your routine, and your routine carries you through it blindly. But for me, it's just, I love my job. I love what I do. Every day, I can't wait to do the kids' workout. Now, there's days where you go to bed later than you wanted to because of your kids, and those days are rough. You know, the alarm hits quick.
Yeah.
But then once you're up, you know, I don't think about it once anymore. Like, it's over.
I agree.
You know, I'm going to the dark, I'm running the stadium, I'm doing their lift, and then I'm coaching all day.
Yeah. So you do it anyway. Like, on those tough days, you just do it anyway.
Oh yeah. There's no excuse.
Right. I love that. I mean, because that's got to transition from you down the line. I mean, because you talk about toughness, resiliency, you know, all of those things. And I'm assuming when these players know that you're the first guy in and the last guy out, like, that creates something inside of them that makes them want to show up for you. And you mentioned earlier, you said the word fun, which I think, especially in the world of working out, like, you know, you got to keep it fresh. You got to keep it fun for yourself and, you know, for you and for the players, because it can get monotonous, right? It's like, you know, we're going to do power cleans again today, coach. Like, it's, you know, that can wear on you, especially at the end of a season or the end of a long off season. What are some of the ways that, I read one of your articles in the Men's Journal, but how do you keep that fun level at extremes?
Man, like, I consider, like, what I write for the guys very challenging. Like, it's not easy. Guys have come off the street and try our program. They're in the dumpster puking. Like, that's just a normal workout. It's not for everyone, but, like, when they get trained up to a certain level, it's so much fun to watch them. And then every Friday I've ever been a head strength coach, I've always wanted to do a theme workout. So every Friday there are themes in the off season of different purposes that I want to drill through them. Like, okay, today I got four to a rack. You're going through every event with those four guys on that rack. You got to get this amount of reps together. You can't do more than 20 reps at a time. Communicate, keep track of the reps you're on, and then you move to the next event, and then you move to the next, and everyone's racing,
yeah,
trying to get this done, and it's like a energy you can't describe. And I'm not changing how hard the work is. It's just, we're doing it with a purpose and a smile on our face. So I think that's where, like, people get confused. Oh, they're dressing up. That's ridiculous. That has nothing to do with winning. You know what? I can't help you there, buddy, but you know what? My kids are having a blast.
Right.
We are working our tails off. So it's been a lot of fun doing that stuff. And I think years later, the calls you get, they're not about how many games we won. They're about the Fridays, the messages, the team building, that's the ticket.
Yeah. I had a lot of coaches in my life, and my high school strength and conditioning coach and my college strength and conditioning coach. If I'm thinking back and, you know, in memory lane, like, those two guys really stand out because of the connection, right? There's something about the weights, and there's something about those struggles of, you know, running gassers and bleachers and things like that, that you develop a bond with the person who's putting you through that nonsense at the time. Right. And so you do have a really strong connection. And I'm assuming that you've got players, you know, from the beginning, you know, and back in Mississippi State, and probably even before that, that have you know, gravitated towards you. You've probably changed their life outside of football. Because let's be honest, most guys don't go to the league, right? So you're trying to build men, you're trying to build leaders, you're trying to build good husbands and things of that nature. How much of what's the importance of that to you?
Well, like it's like so one thing I've learned through this whole thing is like conflict brings you closer to people. And if you create it in a healthy way, those kids, no matter how hard they went against each other that day, they're going to put their arm around each other at the end of it. And so like I've done a lift with several teams called the tap out lift where it, you know, it'd be you versus me in 14 different events. And I got you paired up with just that guy the whole day. So these events are like, you know, they take you to the limit where the only way I win is if you quit. And it's basic. They're all safe. They're all tested. And it's your limit. Can you take it to your limit and then beat him? So 135 bench press on the whistle. Like you're both going at the same time. You know, someone has to stop at some point. Wall sit with 90 pounds on your lap. Someone's going to cave first.
Right.
You know, it's just that simple stuff that, but when you pair it up and it's so personal, at the end of that war that you just went through with that guy, I guarantee you're close with that guy the rest of your life and you'll never forget it. And that dude might be in your wedding because who do you do that with?
Right.
Who are you ever going to do something like that with? And that's the stuff I try to do. I mean, it's as real as it can get, but I try to stage stuff like that through real adversity that can create real bonds.
I'm assuming too, as from the position that you have, you're probably one of the first guys that people come to, right? Like if there's a situation, a problem or whatever it is, because you've developed that bond over, you know, the off season, the in season workouts, all of that. Like, has that grown for you, the importance of who you are in the program? Because I mean, yeah, you know, people look at it, oh, he's the strength and conditioning coach. He's just, you know, he's the meathead version of the program. He makes them run, makes them lift, and then that's just it. I don't think they realize the importance of like the opportunity for a psychological boost that you're giving these guys.
I mean, you're the culture changer. You are the guy that has the pulse in the whole building. You're the feeling it is. You're the message. You're the ground level of the program. It can't stand on anything but the ground, you know? So it's like you build it from the ground and then the whole coaching staff, once you build it, they take it. They take it and they coach it and they hopefully, you know, can win with it. But even if it doesn't work, they will never forget how the ground was built with them and the vibe it was and the energy it was and the closeness of their teammates it was. That to me is priceless no matter what the scoreboard does.
I'm going to be respectful of your time, Coach. I'm going to get you out of here quickly, but I want to ask a couple more questions. So leadership, I know, is really important to you. You're a leader and you're developing leaders. And, you know, so what's the relationship like? And I'm assuming it's been different at every stop, but between you and the head coach, like has the level of that relationship dictated to the level of, you know, congruency inside the program? Because do all head coaches realize that, hey, this is my guy. Like he's my psychologist. He's my everything unit because he gets all the guys, like you said. What's been the relationship between you and the leaders that you've got to work for?
Yeah, they've all been very different. And I've been lucky to deal with all kinds of people. But some, you know, they completely trust you. They don't bother you. They never really even ask a question. They just trust you, you know, and that's a healthy weight room. I mean, I'm going to do exactly what I've always dreamed of doing and believe it the way it should be done. But you also have coaches that want to have their say in what you're doing and why and when, and, you know, could completely flip your schedule and it was the opposite of what you planned and you got to adapt, overcome, and still make it work and not let anyone know about it. So there's definitely leadership obstacles you got to get past in roles like this all the time. And I don't think there's been one job where I've been just straight path the whole way with the head coach I've worked with. And it's been all rosy. Yeah. You know, there's conversations, there's a lot that goes on, but I'd say for the most part, I've been very lucky to work for the people I have.
That's cool. And when you get those, when you come to a new team, how important is it that you figure out that landscape pretty quickly? Or is it, is it always the inverse? Is it dictated to you pretty quickly how this is going to go? Like,
the interview tells me a lot. Okay. Like, I got a pretty good pulse on the problems here before, things they didn't like, things that are still going on, and what I should watch out for. Like, I get a pretty quick idea the first couple weeks I'm there and try to really ask questions about it.
Yeah. Have you, you know, with all the different opportunities that you've had, I'm sure you take a little piece of something new. Cause I mean, you strike me as a learner and as a evolver and somebody who's, you know, consistently trying to be the best version of yourself. Like, have you taken new pieces of yourself to these new places you've gone, like new, maybe strategies, traditions, things of that nature?
Absolutely. Like, I love going to the National Clinic every year, listening to different speakers, taking notes, going back, putting it in there. I love listening to podcasts on what different coaches are doing, what times of year. And then I love calling people. Like, I love reaching out and just asking them like a whole bunch of questions I already wrote down.
Yeah.
And because we're all in the same boat, it's just, I want to know, like, you know, when and why and how, and think about what I'm doing at that point in the year. And I'm always trying to make it different. Like, if I'm somewhere twice in a row, like a year two or a year three, I'm always trying to make it feel different that off season than the one before. So, also like myself getting better, but making the kids feel like, all right, this is fresh. This is good. I like this.
Yeah. Why strength and conditioning? Like, I mean, in going into the coaching world, like, why did you go that direction as opposed to position coach or, you know, the other pathways that you could have taken? Like, what was the model behind that?
I love football a lot. I loved playing it. I loved making plays. But the more I learned myself, I realized I really love the work that it takes to play football. And that's where I was like, all right, this is actually a profession. Like, I can actually, like, get guys ready to play the game. And that, I didn't need anything else. Like, that was plan A all the way, and I'm still on it.
I love that. Was there a strength and conditioning coach along the way that, like, you saw and you're like, hey, this guy's made a difference in my life? Or was it just kind of like one of those things that just happened just naturally through your love of the stuff that doesn't get glamorized, right, in order to get on the field?
Yeah. So my mentors, well, actually, the first internship I did at South Florida, I saw the potential of doing this one day. I really, that created the vision.
Yeah.
And then my next internship at Virginia, that's what sold it. Like, that was like, all right, I've never seen anyone like this guy, and this is like unbelievable. So this is what I'm doing. And it was done. Yeah. I looked up to that guy, and I ended up being his GA at Mississippi State when he got that job. And I was also his assistant at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got lucky with who I worked for.
I think that's super important. You know what I mean? Like, and I think the players that have got the opportunity to have you as their coach and their leader probably feel that exact same way, no matter what they're doing in life now, because they've been around somebody who was a model of, you know, resiliency and strength and, you know, humility, gratitude, and doing things the right way. Last question for you. I love your touch the line video and how important that is, like, with the idea that it's when nobody's really watching, right? Are you going to be the guy who goes? Cause I mean, as a player, I mean, you can probably remember back to days when you were running gassers or, you know, sprints or whatever it was. And there was always one or two guys that you could watch and they wouldn't just go quite to the line.
Yep. Right?
No matter how, it was the worst when you were the most tired, right? Like, how have you inbred that philosophy into your life and your coaching style?
Yeah, like I always say it's just like if you put your hands at a 10-degree angle and you it's not a big problem at first. Like, you don't notice it. It's not doesn't matter. But as soon as you start raising those hands up even higher at that 10-degree angle, as soon as it gets a little far apart, you keep doing these little things wrong. Then you get to a spot where you have no idea how you got there, and then you're not where you want to be. So everyone, like, thinks it's nothing. Right? What's the point of, like, that's the point. Like, the field goal didn't mean to hit the post, but we lost.
Right.
You know, the guy didn't mean to jump off sides on third and four, but he did. And we lost. Like, there's a difference between 8-3 and 3-8, and it's that close. Yeah. Like no one cares how close you were. They just see you were terrible.
Yeah.
Your improvement, it doesn't, nobody cares. So if you don't touch the line, I care. I care because I'm going to fix it now, so I don't have to fix it later when it's too late.
Yeah.
And you care too.
Yeah, the margin from, you know, victory to failure is razor thin, you know, at the high, you know, once you get into the higher levels. And I couldn't agree with you. Like I'm a touch the line guy in life. Like, and I think that message that you're facilitating and implementing into these, you know, young guys' lives, if they're picking it up, is going to go a long way. Cause, you know, like you said, even in real life, like this thing we're doing on a daily basis, you know, the line matters, right? And you can see the people that don't touch the line versus what the ones that do. Coach, I could talk to you for hours. I'm gonna pump out the book, Firelighters 365. I'll put the Amazon links. I think everybody should grab a copy just for those daily motivational messages for, you know, just yourself, and then the articulation of those to the people that you get to lead on a daily basis. So thanks for being the guy you are. I think you're an awesome guy. And like I said earlier, I wasn't kidding. I would come play for you tomorrow just because I can tell the kind of man you are. And you'd be the kind of guy that could be like, Jay, I need you to do this. And my answer would always be yes.
I appreciate it, man. Truly, thank you for being on your podcast, man. You're doing a great job. So thank you.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it, coach. And I wait. Good luck this season. Kick some butt this offseason. I can't wait to. I'm a fan now, so I'm going to be a Charlotte football guy. Probably going to get myself a shirt just so I can support you. And hope you guys have a really good year.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, brother. We'll see you soon. Before we dive into the show, I want to take a quick moment to talk about the sponsor of this episode. It is very dear and near and close to my heart because it is Lori's company, Spa Star. If you ever had the opportunity to watch someone create something from a thought or a vision and make this magical thing actually come to life, well, then you'll know why I'm so extremely proud of her and why I'm so excited to have her sponsoring the Thrive Forever Fit Show. If you've listened to my podcast, then you probably heard her on episode 259. If you haven't heard that, I would go listen to episode 259 as soon as you finish this episode. She talks about the story of how she created it, the adversity she overcame, the challenges that she worked through, and just the inspirational story that I know you're absolutely going to love. But what Spa Star is, it's a luxury wrap. And it was created as a spa wrap for people who were getting beauty treatments. But what we found out is it is a piece for everyday life. People are wearing it as swimsuit cover-ups, resort wear, just to get ready in the mornings or for that special event. It is the most unique piece. And I've actually worn this thing several times. That was the actual first model for this. Maybe I'll show you guys some photos of that, Fred, when the time is right. But it is such a cool creation called the Get Ready Wrap by Spa Star. And because you're a listener, you get 15% off today because you support me. So just go to spastar.net, spastar.net, the word spa, the word star.net. And at the checkout, enter Thrive15, T-H-R-I-V-E 15, and you're going to get 15% off of your Get Ready Wrap. So many of my clients already have these and absolutely love them. We're selling them all over the country and all over the world, for that matter, to high-end luxury spas, and to people just like you that are using them inside of their own homes. They're traveling with them. They're using them at the pool. It's so really just unbelievably cool to see and witness. And I'm so blessed to be a part of it. And I'm so blessed to have Lori actually sponsoring my podcast, which I think is really, really cool. So go check out Spa Star. I know you're going to love it. It is the coolest thing ever. And guys, this isn't just for ladies. This is one of the coolest gifts you could get your any female in your life, for that matter. If Lori hadn't have created it, I would buy them for her as a gift to show her my love and appreciation. So dudes, if you're listening and you need to get a gift for your significant other or some special person in your life, go to spastar.net, grab a Get Ready Wrap. There's all kinds of colors. There's black, there's sage, there's a berry color, there's a gosh, I just went blank. There's a kind of a greeny, kind of avocado-y color. Really cool. You're definitely going to love these, I promise. So go to spastar.net, check it out, support Lori. And Lori, thank you for sponsoring the show. All right, let's get to the action. I hope you guys enjoyed that show as much as I did. And I want to say from the bottom of my heart, I am so thankful and so grateful that you take the time to listen to the show every week, and it means the absolute world to me. If you've got a little bit of time, it would mean everything if you would go and give the show a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening on, as well as share it with a friend or family member that you think might find value in the show. And again, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being an awesome human and listening to the Overweight Mind podcast. Thanks, and we'll see you again next week. All right, bye.